You're listening to the Study Legal English podcast, helping lawyers and law students become fluent in legal English. For more information, visit studylegalenglish.com. Hello, and welcome to the Study Legal English podcast. I'm your host, Louise, and today, listeners, I've got a different kind of show for you. I'm not going to do any further explaining. I'm just going to place you in the good hands of Stephen Horowitz, who you've heard from before in episode 81. Enjoy.
Hi, I'm Stephen Horowitz. I am not Louise Kulbitsky, as you've probably figured out by now. I'm the director of online legal English programs at Georgetown Law School in Washington, D.C. But I've known Louise for a while because we are both legal English teachers. And I knew that she had been teaching in Oman, and I was really curious about it. And I said, Louise, would it be okay if I interviewed you on your podcast so I could hear all about Oman and everybody else could hear about your teaching in Oman as well? Because I think they'd probably be interested to hear that. And she said, sure, why not? So now let's listen on. Hi, Louise. It's so nice to be able to interview you for a change because I'm a big fan of your podcast and I love listening to all the episodes. But I've always been curious about what you do when you teach. I know you go to Oman, right?
Yes, that's what I've been doing since the beginning of 2020 with some breaks because of lockdowns. Okay. I'm both nervous and excited to be interviewed. So thank you, Stephen. What a perfect person to do the interviewing.
Yeah, this is my first time doing a podcast interview as well. So this is exciting for me too. So first, can you tell us a little bit about Oman? Where is it and what's it like when you go there?
So Oman, it's a country in the Middle East. It borders with Saudi Arabia, Yemen, and the United Arab Emirates. It's actually as big as Italy. It's actually quite a vast country, but the population is only 4 million. So it's got a really small population, but quite a large land space.
And had you ever been to the Middle East prior to visiting Oman?
I'd been to the United Arab Emirates because my dad used to work in Dubai and Abu Dhabi in the past. So I'd been to Dubai in 2016. That's the only Middle Eastern country I'd been to before this experience.
And when you go there, who are the people that you're teaching?
The program is called the Omani Legal Force Program. It's a collaboration between a British company called EMG Associates and this Omani company called International Training World. And it's basically, it's a program funded by the government to train Omani lawyers. It's similar to a course that lawyers in the UK do before they become officially qualified, called the Legal Practice Course, which contains all practical skills and also substantive law as well. So we're training Omani lawyers. We teach two classes, one in the morning, one in the evening. The morning group are graduates of law, job seekers. Most of them aren't working yet. And then in the evening, most of them are practicing lawyers. They're generally in their 20s and 30s. The program split into three phases. So the first phase, which we've completed, was actually training them in legal English, training them to prepare for a legal English exam, the test of legal English skills, the TOLS exam. So we ran that course so that their legal English was up to scratch. Then the second phase of the project, which is almost finished. In this second phase, each of the teachers out there is teaching their own course. So I teach practical legal skills. I'm teaching things like client meetings, negotiation, networking, legal writing. Then the other teachers are teaching other aspects of either legal skills or law. So we've got alternative dispute mechanisms, contract drafting, company law, legal ethics and research. And then the final stage of the project is more of a deep dive into like company law and contracts.
That sounds like a great course. I think I'd like to take all of that. Do you have a favorite course you like to teach?
I'm really enjoying teaching the practical skills course that I'm teaching now. It's a 50-hour course. It's quite a lot. actually.
When you're teaching the practical skills, I mean, that sounds like it's focusing on the skills, but it's in English. So they're also working on their English?
Yes. I try to make it always practical, like always practicing the skills. So for example, when we do negotiation, we do, you know, learn about techniques, but then we put it into practice. So, you know, we learn about the kind of theory behind negotiation and certain negotiation styles, negotiation techniques, like psychological tools that you can use in negotiation. And then they put it into practice. They always are doing practical activities to practice these particular skills.
What are the student reactions and interactions like? What's it like being in the classroom with them?
Yeah, they're great. They're very enthusiastic and they always are answering questions and willing to participate. I teach networking as well. And in the networking session, we simulate a networking event. We imagine a kind of scenario and then, yeah, they have to get up out of their chairs and actually go approach somebody, do some small talk, talk about their work, and, you know, hopefully get to a point where they exchange contact details. I mean, with this particular activity, they're always a little bit reluctant to stand up and then to kind of do this activity because it's, I think whether you're a native speaker or not, that kind of situation is quite daunting for anyone to do that. So, you know, they're always a little bit worried about doing that. But at the end, they all give feedback like they're happy to have done it because it's a safe environment to practice that in. It makes them more prepared that if they do go to an international networking event, they're going to feel more confident. They know what to say. They know how to explain what they do. They've practiced it. And not just the language, but they have the skills of being able to make small talk and things like that. So obviously, when we're doing all of this, they're doing it with social distancing. You know, I've been teaching throughout the pandemic. I started teaching in January 2020. When the pandemic hit in March, the program went online for a couple of months and then it restarted around October time, 2020. But when it restarted, our classes were halved. We have kind of normally more or less 10 students in quite big classrooms. So they're always social distance. They're always wearing masks. That's brought its own challenges as well.
I've heard that somebody's invented a mask that's clear so that you can, for speaking, it makes it easier. And I think it was in a language learning context. So, but yes, I know from my own teaching, trying to teach with a mask, and if you're already speaking in different ways, that can be very challenging. And then I noticed one of the topics that you cover is data security and privacy. Can you say a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's quite a short topic. We talk about privacy in general as a general concept and what it is and why it's so important. Privacy is something which, you know, it comes so natural to us that it should be a human right, but we kind of don't really often explore why that is. So we discuss that. We look at privacy in relation to the duties of a lawyer. So for example, confidentiality, client-attorney privilege. The students look at certain scenarios where there have been breaches of that and like what they would do in that situation. And then we also look at GDPR, the General Data Protection Regulation. It's like this major piece of European legislation related to data privacy, and it's got implications on companies all around the world, basically, because it aims to protect the data privacy of European citizens. And so any company that's collecting data of European citizens, they should be complying with this regulation. And basically, if you're a company and you've got a website that people can enter details into, then you're supposed to be complying with this legislation. But that in itself is quite controversial. I find it very, you know, it's a form of one region trying to impose its rules onto another region.
Do you get into the controversy at all with the students?
Yeah, we do talk about it a little bit. Like, you know, some of them say, yeah, that they have their own data protection rules. So it can be perhaps a little bit patronizing to have mm-hmm. that kind of legislation. They don't have exactly the same extent of protection, but it's being developed. They take it very seriously, data protection. There are things which are like crimes in Oman, which wouldn't be crimes in Europe. Like if somebody shares a picture without your consent, that kind of violation is seen as very serious there.
Let me ask you about legal writing. It's a topic that can feel very intimidating for native English speaking lawyers as well as non-native English speaking lawyers. Some people get very excited about it and look forward to it. How big of a role is legal writing in this course? And what is it like with the students? How do they respond to it?
Yeah, I love teaching legal writing and the students really enjoy it as well, but it is one of the more challenging topics for them. So it's a 5-hour session on legal writing. So it's really just an introduction to the topic. We kind of brainstorm about what good legal writing is, get their ideas about it, which is interesting to get their perspectives, because sometimes you get students who are like, you know, oh, you should use the passive voice because it sounds really professional and you should use really traditional language because that's how a lawyer speaks. And then you get other students who are like, well, no, that's outdated. You should use modern language, try to use plain language, try to avoid this archaic language. And generally, the students who I've taught have been of the latter perspective, which is refreshing because it's not always the case. And then we go through principles of plain English. So things like keeping your sentences short, the difference between the active and the passive voice, and when each one is appropriate. We kind of always look at a particular concept and then they do exercises. They spend quite a long time on this particular exercise where they kind of have to either shorten the sentences or take out the legalese or make it more clear. One of the first exercises that they do is to change a sentence from the passive to the active. Uh-huh. And that is always a huge, huge challenge for them because it's a really complicated sentence, I have to say. And they always are like, oh, miss, this is really difficult. I let them get on with it. They do it as a group activity because, you know, it encourages them to speak in English and to discuss things and to have different perspectives on it. So I let them get on with it. And then I kind of sit down with them and help them and talk them through to identify different aspects of it. And basically what they get out of that session is they really clearly understand why, especially in contract drafting or writing to clients, short sentences, active voice, not being heavy on legalese, why that's so important. Even if at the beginning, if there's a student who says that it sounds more professional, I should do it because I'm a lawyer. And then they've seen these examples, which are really difficult to understand. And they've tried to understand them and tried to put them in a clearer way and found it incredibly difficult. They can see that in practice, if they write in that particular way and they're communicating with other lawyers, it's going to waste time. They're going to get into situations where they're not understanding each other, which ultimately could lead to a dispute if they're representing a client and they've written something that's unclear. It's a good session. I enjoy it a lot.
Yeah, that sounds like it builds up a lot of practical awareness for them to be in the seat and experience it from one side, to understand what their aim is going to be when they go to write themselves.
That's what I try to do, because it's easy to say, oh, write short sentences. If you're writing to a client, try to write clearly, write in the active voice. And they can go, yeah, whatever. I want to use like whatever because I think that it sounds like I'm a lawyer. But then doing these activities, it really makes it clear why it's the case. So it kind of, it helps the penny drop, I would say. I try to bring in exercises from real life. There's an excellent resource by the in-house department at Adobe. They've got a brilliant style guide with how their legal department writes. So we look at that to kind of ground the tasks in reality, to say that, you know, this is what people are kind of doing nowadays. It's not just me saying you should do this. I never want to be, you know, that person that's just saying you should do this and there's no reason why or no reality behind it.
You mentioned that you work with students on job applications and interviews. What's that like? And what's the student experience like when you focus on those topics?
So again, that's quite a short session and we do it towards the end of the course, but it's an important one, especially at the moment. The world is in this economic crisis. Oman has got really high unemployment. And so the students who are seeking work are seeking work in a really competitive environment, because when they apply for jobs, they're probably applying for this one job alongside around 100 other applicants. So it's a really challenging job market at the moment. So we look at their CVs. Most of them have CVs in English. We talk about how to improve them. Sometimes they present them very nicely with kind of colors and icons, which I guess is like quite a modern way of presenting your CV. But then in terms of the content, they might not focus on their skills or the tasks that they've done in a particular job. So we look at how they can bring out their uniqueness in their CV, because I think that's what's really, really important at the moment. As well, they do a kind of like speed dating style job interview activity where they ask each other questions and practice answering. We look at kind of typical questions that you might get asked by a law firm. And then the difference between what's a good answer and a bad answer. So if you're asked, are you a team player, for example, you know, they could say, oh, yes, I'm an excellent team player. I've got excellent team player skills, which is not a great answer because they need to show that they've got those skills. So they need to relate it to a specific example. So, you know, yes, I'm an excellent team player. For example, when I was studying on the practical legal skills course, we worked as a team to create a presentation. We delegated tasks to each other. And as a team, we were able to achieve much more than we could have done alone by sharing knowledge and sharing skills. And we got excellent feedback on it. So, you know, giving a real practical example that's showing their skills.
It also sounds like the course provides some practical experience that they can then talk about or highlight in their resume as well.
Yeah, definitely. Because they do contract drafting with Elaher. They're learning about, you know, international company law with my colleague Peter. On my course, they're doing lots of practical skills, you know, practicing negotiations, doing presentations. As part of the presentations session, they work as a group and they either present as though they're presenting at a particular event, or they present imagining that they're a law firm altogether and they're pitching to a client for work to explain their services as a law firm. And some of the time, a couple of other students might come and watch, or someone from the center will come and watch. So they've got a little bit of audience to put a bit of pressure on so that it gives that feeling of they're not just presenting to me and the other few classmates that, you know, they feel very comfortable with. We're always doing it in as realistic way as possible so that when they do this in reality, they've got that as a reference point.
Another question I was thinking about, do you keep in touch or do you hear from your students in the months and years after you teach them?
Yeah, with this group, yeah, quite a lot of them follow me on Instagram. I'm quite active on Instagram for legal English. So yeah, they very often participate in, I kind of post exercises on Instagram. So they do that. And yeah, they do keep in touch. And on this particular project, by the end of it, I will have taught 200 students, but in small groups. So it's been a kind of on rotation. And so after I finished one group, we sometimes see them because they'll be in a different class and they'll come and say, "Oh, miss, we miss you." And they're very lovely, you know, and I like to see how they're doing. Some of them get in touch for, you know, recommendation letters. And then in terms of my students, because I used to teach online a lot, I used to teach some Russian students and I keep in touch with them. A Brazilian student. I like to keep in touch with my students and see how they're doing and progressing.
I know I see on the Study Legal English Facebook group, there's a real community out there of people. It seems like they get to meet because of you and meet through you. Once they've become your student, it's like they're your student for life. They get to be part of the Study Legal English community, which seems like a really nice benefit and an enjoyable part of studying.
I mean, this is quite a new group. I used to have a Facebook page and I realized that on the Facebook page, there was something about it that I just didn't like. It's difficult for other members to post and also it's open. And I kind of wanted to have a group that they join specifically. So it's more private. You get people who are dedicated to legal English. But yeah, I hope that it's a place that people can share their learning and hopefully connect with each other.
I notice whenever a new person joins, everybody welcomes them. It's a very friendly environment.
Yeah, I try to make sure that I welcome them in so that everyone can kind of introduce themselves. And yeah, it is incredible because there's, you know, lawyers from lots of different places. And I do love hearing about what everyone's doing.
Yeah, I always appreciate that. I see what other people who say hello and where they're from. And I really enjoy those updates.
So, yeah, it's nice. I like the friendly atmosphere.
Now, you also get to spend time in Oman. And it sounds like you're very busy with your teaching. But do you have time to take in Omani culture or perhaps do a little sightseeing?
Yes. Yeah. So up until recently, I wasn't very comfortable doing it because I wasn't vaccinated. I'm very lucky and very happy to have been vaccinated now. And so I've had both vaccines. I had AstraZeneca and I had it out in Oman, actually. I was very, very lucky to get it. And so once I'd been vaccinated, I felt much more comfortable kind of going out and doing sightseeing. So yeah, I've had some amazing experiences. I had one weekend where the first evening I went wild camping by a wadi.
I know a wadi is a valley, but what is wild camping?
So yeah, wild camping is like you just arrive somewhere and you pitch your tent and you camp, basically. And it's encouraged in Oman. They love it. They're very much into nature, camping, going hiking in the mountains, picnics on the beaches. So
that sounds terrific.
It's brilliant.
Are there any wild animals you need to be aware of?
So yes, I think there are, but in the south of Oman, by a place called Salalah, I think there's kind of like leopards, maybe. But in the place that I went to a place called Wadi Bani Khalid, which was a couple of hours from Muscat. And no, there were no wild animals, just loads and loads of frogs. I mean, it was incredible. The sound of the frogs in this valley at night was really amazing. So I did that. And then the next night, I went luxury camping in the desert, which was beautiful.
I've heard of that. I've heard it called glamping, glamour camping. Sounds wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. Amazing. Very beautiful. I went to a place called Desert Nights in the Wahiba Sands and went dune bashing. It's like you go in a 4x4 and the driver like drives very fast around these dunes. And I can tell you, it doesn't sound very interesting, but it's really very thrilling. I can tell you.
That does sound exciting.
It's very exciting. And I went to a place called Nizwa, which is this kind of ancient town. It's got a lot of old architecture. And Jebel Akhdar, which is this mountain range, this huge mountain range. and you have to have a 4x4 to drive up there. There's like a police checkpoint at the bottom. They check that you've got a 4x4 and then you can go up. And
wow.
I did it. I hired a 4x4 and went up there. I'd never driven a 4x4 before, but I can tell you it was like a baptism of fire.
You drove it yourself?
Yes.
Yeah. Was it somewhat scary driving?
I have to say, I was driving quite slowly. I was getting overtaken a lot. But the Omani roads are like incredible because they're all very new. The previous Sultan, Sultan Qaboos, he built incredible roads. So they've got these amazing highways, which are just huge and lovely to drive on.
And in the midst of your travels in Oman and your adventures, have you also had a chance to sample the local cuisine?
Yes, the food's amazing. And they love sharing food and they're just great with hospitality. So they tend to eat kind of meat and rice, which is spiced and it's always very, very tasty. There's something called kabuli, I think it's called. And there's something called halva, like Omani halva, which is a sweet. There are different types of halva. Like you can get halva that's from Russia and Turkey, but which is very different to Omani halva. Omani halva is kind of like, it has the consistency of Turkish delight, but it tastes like you're eating sugar with some spices. It's very tasty and it's sometimes got nuts and things in it. And yeah, I've also eaten camel out there.
Oh, wow. And how did that taste? How is it prepared? Is it grilled?
I don't exactly know, but they, you know, they put spices on it and then I honestly don't know the intricacies of the cooking. But I actually, when I went wild camping with my colleague, Rosalyn, and we went to a local shop and bought some camel meat and grilled it on a barbecue.
Wow. Tastes like chicken?
Tastes like lamb, I would say. Mm. I like it. One of my colleagues is very freaked out by it, which I can kind of understand because he's like, he would never eat a horse. So why would you eat a camel? But, you know, I generally like to try everything, so.
That's a great attitude to have. And is camel like something that if you live there, you just, you know, we might have camel tonight. We might have beef. We need something for the kids to eat. We'll just cook up some camel and rice really quick. Does it have that kind of status or is it more of like a rare delicacy, sort of an expensive food?
I'm not sure. I don't think it's a rare delicacy, but I'm not sure if they just kind of cook it all the time. But camels are very much a sign of power. Yeah, it's a sign of status. And something that I learned from my students is that some camels, the racing camels, sell for over $1 million.
Oh, have you seen camel races?
I haven't seen any camel races, but I would like to go. I have ridden a camel.
What was that experience like?
Very nice. For like 15 minutes. It was a short experience. It was short enough to enjoy it.
Good. Well, I want to say thank you for telling us all about these different experiences, both the teaching side and the cultural experience. I feel like I've almost gone to Oman with you, taken the course, and then experienced some of Omani culture as well. So thank you for sharing that and explaining all of that.
Thank you, Stephen. Thank you for interviewing me. You've asked some very good questions and it's been an interesting experience to be on the other end of the line.
On the other side of the microphone.
Great. So that's the end of today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and you learned a little bit about what I do when I'm not doing the podcast. I'd love to get your feedback on this episode. Did you like Stephen interviewing me or did you not like it? If you liked it, then maybe I can twist Stephen's arm to have a chat with me again. Let's see. So let me know. Send me an email to louise@studylegalenglish.com. Or, of course, find me on social media. Just search for Study Legal English Group on Facebook or at Legal Englisher on Instagram. So thanks for listening and see you next time. Thanks for listening to the Study Legal English podcast. If you really want to get ahead, why not become a member and gain access to many learning resources? Visit studylegalenglish.com/pricing.